All right, agenda is in IRC. Today on the agenda, we have more discussion about Peter's issues with the JSON-LD and RDF alignment. Peter and Marcus have been having a discussion back and forth on the RDF working group mailing list. We have to discuss issue 276, which is basically just converting the appendices into normal sections and then reviewing all the last call to issues to make sure we've got all of them covered before we do formal responses for them, and then talking a bit about the candidate recommendation prep. Is there anything else that we should discuss today?
Let's see. I wanted to talk briefly about the blank nodes as predicates and see where we are on that. This
okay.
is David Booth.
Okay.
And then there were editorial changes also about aligning, just from an editorial perspective, aligning with RDF terminology, or
okay.
aligning with RDF.
Okay. Are those comments that Peter put in, or are those separate?
No, these were comments that I had put in previously, and a lot of them were made in the previous draft of the main JSON document.
Okay.
There were a few that were missed, and but the processing document, it looks like, hasn't been updated in that regard yet.
Ah, okay. Okay, yeah, I think that's work that still needs to be done. Okay. Let's go ahead and pick those two things up as the first couple of agenda items, and hopefully Peter will be able to join us once we get through those. So what was the first one that you wanted to discuss, David, those two?
So the blank nodes as predicates.
Okay.
So that I think that was like the, well, just about the only substantive lack of alignment between the RDF and the JSON model.
Right.
And Marcus and I have been going back and forth a bit on the mailing list about that, and so I wanted to see where we stand on that. From that discussion, I've become pretty convinced that we could do away with blank nodes as predicates or as properties in JSON-LD without any significant loss. But I wanted to, you know, I'm not sure where Marcus's feelings are about that at this point, and wanted to check on that.
Sure. Marcus, if you want to respond, I definitely have something to say about that.
Well, I think we discussed allowing blank nodes as predicates quite often already, and we always came to the same conclusion that we want to have that in JSON-LD. So on my side, nothing changed regarding that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess my concern with the whole blank nodes as predicates thing was that we had early on discussed that it was impossible to express JSON in RDF if we didn't allow blank nodes as predicates. So the RDF data model was not capable of supporting this very widely used data format if we didn't do blank nodes as predicates. So, for example, and you could counter-argue that with, well, you could always scolmize the keys in the JSON document to convert them to RDF, but that would not be a proper way of expressing the data, because those JSON documents, the keywords in those JSON documents are never really meant to exist, at least outside of the JSON document. They didn't really, there was no more global data model in JSON. So again, all of this stuff has been discussed, so I would be very concerned with removing that, because then that means that, you know, the JSON-LD, very strangely, the JSON-LD data model is not capable of expressing JSON, which is the language that is, you know, the underlying, you know, syntax that we use. So I think David Booth is partially correct in that it wouldn't really cause all that much damage, because we've backed off of trying to create a mechanism to convert JSON into RDF. Just any other thoughts on this from other folks?
Your audio dropped. I just started to hear you again right now.
Oh, whoops. How long was it out for?
Like after your first half sentence.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Okay.
Yeah, and you might want to wait for people to get back in too.
Okay. So did everyone get kicked from the call?
No, we just dialed
back
audio.
In again. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just now seeing all the lost audio things.
Hi, it's Peter.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, this is David Booth rejoining.
Hey, David. Okay, so unfortunately, I think most of what I said was not heard.
D-Booth is partially correct. It wouldn't cause any real damage because we backed off a bit. Is the last thing I caught.
Yeah. And so I think the bottom line is the reason we have blank node predicates in JSON-LD is so that we could express something like a JSON document. If we don't have it there, we can't express something as simple as a JSON document, and that seems to be kind of dumb considering the whole reason that we have JSON-LD is built on top of JSON, and the RDF data model can't even support the JSON, JSON expression in a correct way. So that's why we have it in there. And I don't know if the argument for we can't always preserve blank node predicates, I don't know if that's that's a strong enough argument for us to remove the feature at this point. I think we can tell people, look, if you really want fully interoperable RDF data with you know, quote-unquote legacy RDF systems, then don't use blank node predicates. I think that at least for now, would be good enough such that people will move towards blank node predicates in the future, and maybe RDF 2.0 will have blank node predicates, but it won't keep some of the other people that want to do things like suck in a bunch of JSON data and express it in RDF. It won't keep those people from doing things like that, using blank node predicates. David, you're on the queue.
Yeah, so that isn't what I saw in the example that Marcus provided in email. In the example that he provided in email, it was very clear that relative URIs could just as well have been used and actually would have been better. So I have not seen any use case, any motivating use case that really required blank nodes as predicates. I'm not suggesting we do scolemization at this point because it seems pretty clear that simply prohibiting blank nodes as properties is a better way to go. It's simpler, and as I say, from the use case that Mark has provided, it seemed pretty clear that relative URIs could just as well have been used, and in fact, better. Have been used.
Hmm.
So
Sandra, maybe there's some
other use case that I didn't see, but if so, I'd like to see it.
Sandra, you're in the queue.
So I have not really been following this discussion, and you can just say I'm not relevant here, but I hear you saying, Manu, that I think that surely you're not claiming that every JSON document maps by JSON-LD to RDF.
That's correct. Yeah. I'm not claiming that.
You're just trying to say a somewhat larger class of JSON documents maps cleanly via blank node predicates.
That's correct. Yeah. Another way of putting it is that RDF. I mean, this was something fundamental that we hit in the beginning, and it kind of took me aback because it was. You know, we always talk about RDF being this kind of universal data format, and here we are with one of the biggest deployed, you know, data formats out there, JSON, and RDF can't express a standard JSON document, or most of the JSON documents out there, RDF cannot express. And we really need to, I think that really needs to be fixed in the RDF data model, and this is kind of we're kind of going halfway with it in JSON-LD because we can't go as far as we want to with it because, you know, blank node predicates are out of scope for the RDF working group.
Yeah, I'm kind of dubious that class of documents is of interest. I mean, if you had
that's most of the JSON documents out there, though, Sandra. Right.
Right. And until you map the predicates to IRIs, you don't have interoperability. So there's no point in having the mapping to RDF. You don't really gain anything by mapping to RDF with blank predicates because you can't get interoperability then.
You can get it through a side channel, but sorry, Nicholas is on the queue, but
panel,
I didn't want.
Same side panel, you could have mapped to real predicates.
Mm-hmm.
Is my take.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't care a lot, and as I said, I'm not really up to speed, so I'll step out.
Right. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I don't really see the use case for mapping that JSON either, because in general we don't know what it means, and I don't really see why. You suppose that it means that these keys represent blank nodes. They could just as well, it's more reasonable to think that they represent string literals as predicates, which isn't allowed either, for very good reasons, I think. So I don't really see how that argument is applicable here, because I don't see the semantic correlation. And as Sandra says, I don't care about the JSON that has no defined meaning, because it just doesn't apply to what JSON-LD is about. If you believe that your keys map properly to proper predicates, you should not define blank node predicates for your keys. You should just set the default vocabulary in the context.
Marcus, you're on the queue.
Well, another use case that you might have is that sometimes you are just interested in some parts of the data and you don't want to map everything to like proper predicates from the very beginning. And so you could map the intermediary predicate to blank nodes till you map them to real URIs, but still get the nested content. Otherwise, that would be lost because we stop as soon as we find the property which is mapped to an IRI. So if I have, for example, I don't know, a blog post where I have comments and I have the author of those comments and I'm just interested in mapping the authors to RDF, then I could map all the steps to those authors to blank node predicates. And well, they wouldn't have any meaning, but I'm not interested in them. I'm just interested in the author, for example, which is deeply nested.
But why map them at all? Why just not?
Because otherwise you wouldn't get to the author. It would be dropped.
You would lose
the
deep tree.
Subtree, you would lose the whole
the
tree if you don't map the author.
Right. That's an interesting argument. That there is something in between here, an unknown relation.
Right, but sometimes you just don't care about that relation. So, for example, you just want to see all the people that were involved in some discussion. So you have a blog post and some people, and you don't care if it was an author of a comment or the author of the blog post or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. That's a more interesting argument. For the record, I'm not particularly opposed to supporting BNodes anywhere. In the general case, I'm much more in favor of the suggestion Marcus had a while ago that I'm getting a lot of echo here.
Me again.
All right.
I'm not hearing echo.
Now it's better. The argument or the suggestion Marcus put forward a while ago that we could have an option for generalized RDF, which is false by default. But that's the end of parenthesis. That's just in general for these problems, both graph names and predicates. But to the point, Marcus's argument about if you have data and some terms in the JSON seemingly means nothing, but they lead to data which can be mapped to RDF, then that's certainly a good case for preserving that, and the BNode predicate would do that.
Yeah, but so relative to RDF, I would do it just as well, or better.
I disagree.
Well,
I think that blank nodes are very different from relative RIs. They're used for So I don't think that we can say you could use a relative RI, because you could make the count. You could make the opposite argument. You could say in this case a relative RI is not a good solution for this. In this case, a blank node is the right solution for it.
Why?
Because you don't want the identifier to be relative to the document. You don't want to create a URL that somebody else can end up using to refer to that thing that you don't want to have referred to from outside of that document. You want it to be specifically inside the document, that identifier to be only inside the document and not accessible outside of the document.
Yeah, so that was that point about that is anti-web.
It doesn't matter. I mean, we're trying to provide a solution for a developer. It doesn't matter if in that very particular case they want to be anti-web. The whole anti-web argument is, I think, a shaky argument to make, because a developer may want to create their system in an anti-web way for a very good reason, right? Such as, I don't want this
fine,
to be out
there. That's fine, but the W3C standard should not be encouraging or supporting that.
Well, you could just as well make the argument that predicate would be anti-web, because it's a sort of processing result. It represents something unstable. So why would you implicate somehow that, or imply somehow that others can use that predicate when you don't yourself really know what it means? It's the outcome of some computation in your comment system.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And let's also not forget that W3C has created plenty of other specs that are anti-web, quote-unquote anti-web. I mean, XML is a perfect example. It's very anti-web, right? There are ways of writing XML that are very anti-web. There are ways of using many W3C technologies that are very anti-web, but that doesn't mean that there are not good use cases for those.
Well,
for those.
Just because other mistakes have been made, it doesn't mean we should encourage more mistakes.
Well, I'm not saying they were mistakes when they made them.
Well, if you argue that, you could just as easily say that we should not have the blank nodes at all.
Yeah, blank nodes are the anti-web thing here, and I disagree
right.
that they are anti-web. They are explicit about that don't use this part, because this will not stay stable. So.
Mm-hmm. There's like that part of blank nodes, and the other part of blank nodes is that you don't. There's that part of blank nodes, and the other part of blank nodes is that you don't want to create an identifier that everyone else can read, and in some cases you want to make it easy on the developer. You don't want to force them to have to create a well-known identifier for the data that they use, because some of the data that they end up generating is throwaway data. Right, it just lives on the wire, and you need some way to reference it while it's on the wire. But you don't really want to create a long-term identifier or long-lived identifier for that data.
Right. So making it easier on the authors—that is the reason for blank nodes. But that can also be achieved with relative URIs in this case.
Right. Well, we're back around to the original argument, which is that may not be the best solution for the developer. I'm sorry, I'm jumping queue. Dave Longley, I think you're on the queue.
I was just going to recommend that we discuss the option for having generalized RDFs and see if there's general support, if we could just maybe push this through as an option that by default is false, and that way people who want to have this behavior can have it by flipping on the option. Since it sounds like maybe it's less common, and maybe that would resolve all these issues, and we would get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I think that's a very good. Yeah, this is an API option it's just in the JSON-LD options object to say whether or not generalized RDF is turned on or off.
Not really, because the 2RDF is not a part of the API.
But we can make it a flag in
the
algorithm.
To the 2R, yeah.
Yeah, it would be a flag in the algorithm, and then whenever we get around to actually speccing out an API, we would include it there.
Normative or informative change?
It would be a normative. Depending on
really
the default value.
Phone, right?
Sorry?
David, you're on the queue. Go.
So that the problem with that route is that when you're producing standard RDF, then you would have unnecessary information loss because those predicates would be lost instead of being usable as via relative IRI. They would be completely lost. The information would be gone.
Yeah, and I think that's not necessarily true. If you don't want the information to be lost, your system shouldn't be generating it in the first place, or you should have a conversion step before you convert it to RDF. So I think there's
like
a way around that.
It also sounds like you might want the information to be lost in this case.
Yeah.
Well, not in the case that Marcus put forward, where you need the B node or something to step on to get to the thing that's linked to the author of the comment.
Well, what? Well, in that case,
you would lose the intermediary stuff.
Oh,
right,
that's true.
Yeah.
And that's yeah.
Yeah, but if you flattened, of course, then you could lose them, and you'd still retain the objects that were being referenced. They just wouldn't be connected. But they're not connected anyway in any usable sense.
Right. And you don't care about the connections in that case, so that's fine.
It's a bit hazier, though, because this example is fairly sketchy at the moment. We don't really know anything about the use case.
So the information would be lost because triples would be dropped.
Yeah,
that's right, but you have the choice.
The information,
you can also
preserve
them and then columnize them if you want them to be preserved.
Right. You can either columnize if you wanted to actually keep them around, but I think we're talking about a case where you actually don't want them to be around other than sort of as transitive data.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, I do not want information to be lost. I want to use standard RDF, and I want information to be preserved. I don't want triples thrown away.
Then in your case, you would implement something to convert every single predicate. You would schemize every single predicate that you get access to. So what you would either have to talk with your publisher to make sure that they end up preserving that data. Or you would make sure to end up preserving, or you would write an algorithm to preserve that data. I know that that's not ideal for you, but I'm not hearing a lot of support from the group to do schemization by default.
Yeah. No, right. And I think schemization is a less ideal approach. I think that it is more complicated than is needed. But I think it's important that standard tools be able to produce the same RDF from standards compliant parsers, that two standards compliant parsers always produce the exact same triples from the same JSON, from the same JSON LD.
Yes,
without information.
They are doing that.
But they do.
I mean,
but
they
would have information loss in this case.
There's other cases where there's information loss where the predicates aren't mapped at all. In which case they're dropped, that's part of the algorithm.
Yep.
In fact, to not lose it, an author needs to explicitly map these properties to blank nodes. It doesn't happen automatically.
And that's the same case that would happen here.
Right. So I'm pointing out that if instead of treating them as blank nodes, if you simply treated them as relative URIs, then there wouldn't have to be any information loss.
Well, the author is capable of treating them as relative IRIs or as blank nodes or not mapped at all. That's up to the author to what to do. So I don't really see nothing automatic going on here. The simplest thing is to add vocab to your context, and then properties that aren't otherwise mapped turn into IRIs relative to that vocabulary. So that's the easiest thing to do. If an author explicitly says that I'm using a B node for this property, then he's saying I don't want that to be referenceable outside.
Yes, right. So I'm suggesting that be prohibited in JSON LD.
What do we gain by prohibiting authors from doing that?
What would be gained is alignment with RDF and friendlier downstream use of the JSON of the data, of the downstream RDF data.
I understand that argument, but I would counter that with I think authors will end up just not outputting that data like they currently can with JSON-LD. Some authors will not map it, so that data will not show up at all, which it has the same effect. And I think that the alignment with RDF can still be achieved by having the option in there and having it default to false.
So we can achieve both of
those goals in a different way.
So I heard that argument from Marcus, and he gave an example. But then when I looked at the example, it was not convincing at all, because it looked, from the example, it looked like the author could just as well have done them as relative URIs instead of as blank nodes.
That's fine. The author can make that choice. Right.
You can replace every blank node with a relative IRI.
Yes. So, to my mind, that's a good reason for...
I was just going to say...
blank nodes as properties. Yeah.
I think the case we're trying to cover is that some authors actually don't want to have to map their predicates to things, and sometimes they want that data dropped because it's very local, private data. And we can cover that use case and cover the other use cases.
The use case that Marcus showed me was not convincing. So I'd like to, if there is a more convincing use case, I'd like to see it.
I have an example of a use case, which is where a website has an API that serves JSON, and some of the predicates are intended to only be used locally by that API, maybe to serve up a website or something, and as private keys. And then for other things that consume that data, those keys are not meant to map to anything. And it allows a developer to create a single unified API that serves both of their purposes.
It's the same
common cases where you don't want to map predicates to things, but maybe you want to interpret them in a certain way using a different context. It's all based on the type of context that you want to use to interpret the data.
Yeah, so I would like to see. So if you could put a use case on the list that I can look at, I would love to see it, because Marcus put one on that was not compelling. But if there is one that's compelling, I would like to see it. So.
Okay. At this point, I think we should table the discussion and move on. We need to see a proposal that we can get consensus on. And I don't see a proposal on the table right now that would have more consensus than what we have right now in the spec. So maybe you and Dave Longley can talk offline, but I'm not really seeing. It doesn't sound like the group wants to get rid of this feature, mainly because we keep coming up with other use cases where it'd be helpful to have this feature. I think you're going to have to come back with a proposal. Go ahead.
So Dave Longley, could you put an example on the list that we can discuss on the list? That would be very helpful.
Yeah, I'll send one over. Sure.
Yeah, and if anybody else has an example too, because I would like to see any example that anybody feels is compelling, because I haven't seen it yet, so I would like to.
Okay.
Thank you.
Another point maybe is that now in RDF concepts we have something which is called generalized RDF datasets, and so it aligns to RDF. To generalize data sets.
Yeah, I think we should not get into that until this is resolved.
Okay. You had a second thing, David.
Oh yeah, just the editorial stuff.
Pretty quick.
Yep. So there's still a few editorial things in the main JSON document. And most of them look good. Just that, for example, I noticed the title of section C1 that says transformation from JSON-LD to RDF. So that should say like to RDF model or interpretation of JSON-LD as RDF. The API document, it looks like, hasn't been updated at all about the terminology. Basically, the issue was to avoid implying that JSON-LD is not RDF, because at present, some of the terminology implies that JSON-LD is not RDF.
Okay. Have you outlined that all of those instances in the API document in an email, just so Marcus knows?
I could go through and identify them all, if you'd like.
Yeah, just pointing them out would be helpful, I think, just to make sure that we don't miscommunicate on what needs
sure,
to be
yeah.
changed.
Sure, yeah. Yep, okay, I'll do that. I'll go through thoroughly and yep.
Okay. Great. Thanks, David.
Okay.
Okay. So are those are the main changes? And I know that, I don't think the API doc has been updated yet. Okay. All right. So, Peter, you're on the call. Is that right? I think I heard you earlier on.
I'm on. I was muted.
Ah. Okay. Great. Okay. So let's next.
I don't have IRC because of Freenode policies, stupid Freenode policies.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
Unless somebody can point me at a HTTP repeater for Freenode.
There is one. I think we have, on the JSON LD webpage, if you go to json-ld.org/minutes,
it's webchat.freenode.net.
Yeah, well, the link on the JSON-LD page has everything already filled out for them. And there's a join via web IRC link you see at the top of the page. Okay, so while you're connecting, Peter, I'm going to put some of the links in here. Okay, so I went through and attempted to update the JSON-LD syntax spec with feedback from both David and Peter. As shown on the RDF on the mailing list, Peter is not happy with the updates, meaning he wants more work to be done to more closely align with RDF. So that's what this discussion is about, the changes that Peter would like to see in the spec so that we are more closely aligned with RDF or we're using more RDF terminology. Peter, would you like to do a quick intro on the main changes that you'd like to see?
Peter, are you muted?
Because we can't hear you.
No, I'm. This is through Google Voice, and anyway, I was muted. So in my opinion, the most recent set of changes are definitely a big step in the right direction. Let me just summarize my remaining contentions. This is an appendix, and therefore issues of readability are, and succinctness and not offending anybody's sensibilities are value should be valued as zero, and issues relating to completeness and correctness should be valued as infinity. I mean, this is not the introduction. This is not even explanatory text. This is an appendix, and therefore any attempt to justify anything in the appendix using valuations different from those will be treated with ultimate disdain by me. I mean, this is serious, right? I mean, appendices are for supposedly where you get things right.
Yeah, well, so there's another issue that says that we might not leave these as appendices, so we should probably strike that from the article because they might turn away from being an appendix. But it's probably going to stay in the back matter of the document, which I think the main thrust of your argument is still applicable to that.
Yeah. So the remaining bits have to do with mostly, I think, with numbers. Is that really the only remaining bit? Mostly, I think. And I just spent a very disagreeable couple of hours trying to figure out what JSON numbers really are. And I am now more confused than ever, and the rationale that has been presented to me about what JSON numbers are does not appear to be supported in any document about JSON, which is really kind of weird. So I don't know what you guys are going to do about that. I mean, what is a JSON number? I mean, as far as I can tell, the only pointers are the only things that talk about what JSON numbers really are firmly fall on the side that any JSON number is an IEEE floating point double, and therefore zero is precisely the same as 0.0. And I don't see how anybody could come up with any different reading, although apparently people have. I just find this crazy in a certain sense.
So I think what you're seeing is the whole reason that a new JSON working group has come into existence, right? They're trying to clarify a lot of these edges of JSON. I agree with Marcus. I think it's fairly clear. It's clear at least what our interpretation of the spec is. Now, you know, you certainly disagree with that, but the interpretation of the spec to this point, I think, has been fairly aligned. So, you know, we might be in a case where we say, look, this is how this group is choosing to interpret the spec text, and because of that, this is the way that the spec is going to be written, or the normative, you know, text in the spec is going to be written. So I think if we're going to change our mind on how we're interpreting the spec text, we need a compelling reason to do so. I'm offering that as one potential path forward. There may be another one.
Yeah, but
might
I don't
find something.
As far as I can tell, you've pulled something out of thin air. I mean, really. Every document that I've read indicates is either silent on the issue or indicates that JSON numbers are IEEE floating point doubles.
Which document played as a bark from ECMAScript?
RFC 4627, json.org, ECMAScript version 3, version 5.
About the RFC.
Yes, it does.
No, okay.
RFC 4627 says that JSON. RFC 4627 says JSON is derived from ECMAScript.
Yeah. But then it makes very clear what numbers are. They are arbitrary size.
No, it does not. It says what the RFC 2647 is thereafter silent on what numbers are. It produces only a grammar. And it defers everything else to ECMAScript version 3. Everything else. And ECMAScript version 3 is
to ECMAScript and that RFC is in the introduction, which says there is a single sentence and says it is derived from literals in JavaScript, and that's all it says about ECMAScript. So they are, it's based on it, yeah, but it's different. You can't have top level strings, for example. And I
but
also
then there's no, but there's no,
mail.
But the whole point is, okay, but then what is JSON? Somebody then tell me what JSON is. Point me to something that tells me what JSON is supposed to be, because I'm supposed to go to a standard that uses it.
Well, I also saw that you sent an email
and
to the JSON working group.
Forget about me. W3C is supposed to be voting on a standard that refers to JSON. And JSON, if JSON isn't built on ECMAScript, it's built on nothing.
Why? It's a serialization format. There is a grammar for it. So why isn't that enough for a serialization format?
So tell me what 0.0 means. Tell me what 0 means. Tell me what /U0061 means.
That's not legal in JSON.
I mean, if it's simply the people that wrote, I mean, now, okay, so maybe you're saying it's implementations. Well, then the weight is also on JavaScript side, right? Or JavaScript compatible side, right? Because there's many JSON implementations that just use JavaScript notions, right? So, I mean,
right.
What are we supposed to do here?
We tried to do the best that we could do, but we can't rely on size restriction or precision restriction. So we spelled it out in the data round tripping section, the API, the explaining what the issues are and say how we handle them.
In most cases, it works right,
but in some cases, it won't. And we can't do anything about it.
I think it scares me. I mean, we're...
Hold on. JSON is widely, widely used. It is a heavily used data format. So the idea that this is going to result in some huge catastrophic problem, I think, is if that was the case, it would have happened years ago. So I don't think things are as dire as you're making them out to be, Peter. I do understand what you're saying. You're saying that there is not we're building this on something that doesn't necessarily have a solid foundation, or there are multiple ways that you can read the spec and you could go one way or the other on it. I totally agree with you on that. But I think what we've done, and the other problem here is that we're looking at a syntax spec and deriving a data model from that. There is no data model for JSON. The closest one could be ECMA, but there is not wide agreement on that actually being the data model for JSON. Right. So when you come from the W3C world and you come from the RDF world, there's a solid data model there, and there has always been a solid data model there. That is not true at all for JSON. Right. So that's one of the reasons that this new group has been created, is to create this kind of more standardized solid data model for JSON. But in the meantime, we still have to make progress in this group with JSON LD, and we have to get to something that we have consensus. And so I think that if you look at RFC 4627, you may disagree with that being the way to interpret the document. But I think what we have consensus around is the correct way to interpret it, which is that JSON numbers do not have a limited range. You've got integers that can be arbitrary length, and you've got decimals that can be arbitrary length. I know that it's not perfect. It's nowhere near perfect, but I think it's something that most implementers can implement based on top of what is the big danger here by proceeding in the way that we've been proceeding.
Well, so there's two issues, okay. And I would be fairly happy with canning the size limit, the length limitations. But now we have real interoperability problems between integers and floating points. And
how? What's the example? Where's the interoperability? The 0.0 versus
is
zero?
Zero versus 0.0. Are they the same number?
In JSON LD, they are. In JSON as a string, in a JSON string, they aren't. They are different. But
in JSON LD, they are?
About equality. Yes, they are.
So
because
I thought that JSON LD mapped in. I thought
in
that JSON LD
mapped
into integers and decimals and floating points.
Yeah, that's right. But numbers
then
without
zero
fractions
and zero
are considered
different.
numbers without fractions.
But then zero and...
I think we need to clarify the spec text so this is easier to understand. What it should really be referencing is what Marcus is talking about, which is we're talking about numbers that have fractional parts and numbers that do not. So 0 yeah. and 0.0 are the same number because they neither one of them has fractional parts.
I think that's
but 0.0 has a fractional
API
part.
Spec.
But wait a minute. 0.0 has a fractional part.
Well, then a non-zero fractional part.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but now you're in the issue. So, but if you're going to go there, now we're into numerical analyst territory. And then, and I mean, and again,
what's your target? What's your proposal? What are you proposing that we should do? What's the alternate to what we're doing right now, Peter?
Well, I don't know if there's any viable forward path, but I mean, the most conservative way would have been to use IEEE floating point double throughout.
But we can't do that.
Which I think would have
a number of issues. We've already discussed that in this group, and we can't do that because that has a number of horrible implications. Worse than what we're doing right now.
Like, it's incompatible with most JSON implementations, which do... I mean, I don't understand what the horrible implications here are.
You're saying we should express all numbers as floats?
As specified in ECMAScript.
I'm confused. I don't think that that's true, though. We have whole numbers in ECMAScript as well, right? Integers. Those are not floats.
ECMAScript is very clear that the number... The all numbers are IEEE floating point doubles. Very clear on that issue.
Yeah, in ECMAScript and JavaScript, you just have floats, so doubles.
Dave Lane is on the queue.
Dave Lane.
Yeah, I mean, this issue, we've seen this issue long before when we first came up with the standard. We realized it was a problem because all the different parsers, they're going to... They will return integers if you're using integers and floating points if you're using floating points. And if you have like 0.000, it's going to just turn it into an integer. And that's just the way the parsers work these days. And long ago, one of the solutions we came up with was that if you want to make sure you know what the type is, you just have to give it a specific type and using our type notation. And it's kind of hard to get around some of this stuff. The standard is kind of weird the way that it deals with this, but you know, we just have to deal with what we have, and it hasn't really been a problem yet. I'm not sure what the problems are if you misinterpret things, other than you have bad data to begin with. If you're really concerned about it, you should just type your data.
That's correct, but that indicates that, well, anyway, I mean, in some sense, I'm certainly not going to lie down on the road over this, except that Appendix A should state what's going on.
I think we need to be more clear. I guess what I'm trying to get from you is where exactly you think we're not being clear. What specific things are we not being clear on? And then if we can get a list of that, we can easily just put that into the spec.
I think
that was in my last several suggestions had wording that contained all the wording to that effect, and I reiterated that in my last email on this thread.
Okay, I don't remember seeing anything about 0 versus 0.0, but it could be that I just...
Well, it didn't say that. It said that integers map to XSD int, which you wanted to be, or XSD long, which you wanted to be integer, and decimals and dotted ones map to doubles, which I think is also what you had, but you could use decimals if you wanted.
But we can't do that because most implementations that we're building on top of don't do that. We don't have access to the we don't have access to the parser in that way. While we could put that in the spec, no implementation is actually going to give us the information to through the JSON-LD that we can work with to achieve what you want.
Well, we can still rely on the non-fractional, on the non-zero fractional part of the number, though, as we did till now. So we get access
sure.
to that. So if it's 0.0, it's an integer, it's 0. Otherwise, it's 0.1, it's a double.
Mm-hmm.
And currently that's explained in Appendix C in relationship to RDF. I don't know if you've seen that, Peter. It still talks about non-decimal
numbers. I've read lots of stuff.
Decimal numbers, but...
Okay, so I think at this point we just need some solid spec text that's correct. I think, Peter, the reason that I looked at that and didn't quite think that we could integrate that into the spec is because it would be impossible to implement. But I think I might understand a bit better what you want. Again, writing spec text based on me thinking what you want is probably just going to result in not what you want.
Well, that's why I tried to produce actual text for you guys.
And I'm saying that text was incorrect. We need to go back
Now look, if you want to say that my text is incorrect, you have to say why it's incorrect. Because
I did.
You know, now I'm
did.
In the point.
Didn't I?
Well, but you hadn't beforehand.
Okay, but I have now, and you know why it's incorrect. Can you author some new spec text?
I still don't. Well, you're saying it's incorrect because some implementations do something else.
All implementations.
No. Well, maybe what I had written at one point, but there certainly are lots of implementations that turn everything into double.
Okay, that's a different. Sure, that's fine. I agree. That's a different discussion from what we are talking about the specific spec text that you were talking about. Okay, I mean, we can just reiterate that we can just go over this again on the mailing list and try to get some spec text that works. But I think it's important, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, I think all the remaining issues are in the data model section, is that correct, Peter? So that needs to be clarified, right?
The last time I looked, I was not completely unhappy with the beginning part. So I'll probably remain silent I'm still certainly not happy with the beginning parts, but I think we're at the best we can do.
Okay.
And in the data
model and somebody
section,
was saying
I
that
think...
appendix.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Somebody was saying that Appendix C said something about this number stuff.
Yeah, right. That was me.
Where?
It's in the note. All JSON numbers and Booleans can be mapped to XML schema data types. Do you see that?
Yeah, but that's what I thought I was saying. Non-decimal JSON numbers mapped to integer and decimals mapped to double.
Yeah, non-decimal, we already discussed that and probably are going to clarify that because non-decimal is not very clear in my opinion. So we probably say
But look, if you guys write down things and I react to it, you can't change in the middle. Okay? I was asking about 0 and dot 0, right? And this one says that 0 maps to integer and dot 0 maps to the double, doesn't it?
Yes, it does,
no?
And it needs to be corrected. It does say that.
Yes,
it does need to
and
be
you
corrected.
Guys beat up
we've
on
having,
me because
we've been
you
having
said
discussion
it
about it.
Yes. So don't complain when I read what you guys write and come up with valid conclusions from it and complain about the conclusions. Got it?
Okay.
Well, but that text was already in the last couple of months. There was just some editorial changes which didn't change anything regarding the result.
Yeah, it's just difficult because this stuff is a moving target and it's hard to know what different people are reading at different times because it's kind of fluid and that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look at the documents as they exist and reacting to them, right? And trying to understand all of the other things. But I hadn't seen anything about changing that note that I can remember. Okay. So if, you know, what we,
right.
you know, what is needed is some notion of clarity as to what's really going on, and so that people can understand what the various JSON number encodings actually mean.
Right.
I think we agree.
So,
yep.
Okay. That's the way forward.
And then it's up to, yeah. And then it's up to you guys to make sure that the, well,
yeah, no, it's probably,
I mean, I think it's up to you guys to under, to get, and then the other question, you know, is it's up to you guys to figure out how the JSON people will handle this, because every time I look at JSON, I get more and more confused. I mean, to the point that I actually sent in a message to the JSON working group today, reiterating somebody else's very strong impression that JSON numbers were IEEE floating point doubles.
I think there's general
right.
confusion around JSON and numbers just throughout all various communities that use that syntax. And implementations sometimes do different things, and that's one of the reasons why this is such a difficult topic. We're trying to get down the text that works the best with what parsers are out there and what's available. And it's difficult because there is no easy document to point to, like you said. And that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
So, as the way forward, like, would it help if we move that node, for example, to the data model instead of having it in relationship to RDF? Or is it clear enough if it's in relationship to RDF?
Well, it has to. My view is that there should be some mirroring of that in Appendix A. I mean, it can be quite compressed. I'm perfectly happy to have Appendix A compressed. It's just that it should at least touch on all of the sticky points, right? And you might,
so
in Appendix A, you might even say that the mapping is kind of weird, and not that you would want to, right? But, you know, so I'm easy. I mean, as long as Appendix A alludes to the right things.
Okay. So what
if we just
include a link in Appendix A saying that numbers are mapped to XSD schema types and the details can be found in Appendix C?
Yes, that actually would be fine, and I think that would be also fine for all the other things too. So, but of course, saying that is probably longer than saying true and false map to Boolean and strings map to string, right? So whatever, right? And so numbers are the most tricky point there. And,
right.
you know, as long as there's something that you can hang your hat on, and so that somebody reading appendix A can really see how JSON LD is a generalized RDF data set. I mean, that's my view. I mean, I should be able to read Appendix A and come up with at least with the germs of all the ideas that are needed to show that JSON LD documents, the JSON LD documents are generalized RDF data sets.
So I think the only thing which isn't clear there is how lists and numbers are mapped to RDF. And that's described in Appendix C, I believe, also for lists. Well, I'm not sure for lists. But if we include a link to Appendix C for that and describe it there in detail, would that address your concerns?
I think you also
or
need to have
other...
a gloss, not just a link. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like a short sentence
so...
saying lists and,
yeah.
and numbers are mapped to, you know, XSD schema types and the
yeah, I mean,
RDF.
So what do we have here? We have. Yeah, but really what you have there? I mean, strings, numbers, true or false, and lists. I mean, those are the things that are kind of alien to RDF.
Right.
but aren't really. I mean, they're not really alien to RDF. They are in RDF. It's just that Appendix A pulls them out and describes them differently from the place they would fit in RDF.
It describes them in JSON threads. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Well, it's not that it describes them. It's not that it describes them in JSON terms. That's fine. It describes them in JSON terms as if they are divorced from the RDF way of describing them. And I think that that's the link that needs to get made in Appendix A.
I agree with that.
I'm having how they are divorced.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm fine with everything that we're discussing. It's just getting the actual text right is incredibly difficult if we don't have very specific text in front of us. I think all of us agree that that's the right direction that we want to take this stuff. It's that whenever we end up writing spec text, it ends up being wrong. So
yeah.
I think we need something a little more specific. And I think when we bring up those, you know, when you go off and write some specific spec text, I think we're going to need to iterate on that because there may be things that we know about JSON implementations that make it impossible to do, you know, some of these things. I think the number thing was just an example of that, and I'm hoping that these other things are going to be easier to write. But I think we need to get past the, you know, we need to do something like X. Right, so something like X is not going to help us at this point. We need specific spec text sentences.
I
know you did, and that's good. That's very good. I think we're going to keep. We need to keep doing that because, like we found out during this call, this is a moving target, and I think people are still miscommunicating a bit. So I want to make sure that whatever we agree to do on the call is effectively going to result in someone proposing some spec text and the rest of us looking at it versus this idea that some spec text is going to magically appear somewhere that that makes everyone happy, because I don't think that's going to happen at this point.
So what's wrong with the boilerplate that I proposed? Let's take the one for Booleans, which roughly was left paren, which are shorthand for XSD Boolean right paren, or something like that.
The value space is different for XSD Boolean than JSON.
Is it?
It is. You can't have 0 and 1 for Boolean value in JSON, as far as I know. It's only true and false.
But that's not the value space.
It's a lexical space?
XSD
lexical space, yeah.
Yeah. But that, I didn't say anything about lexical space. This is all about value spaces.
Right, but it's confusing when you have different value and lexical spaces between the two languages. So, for example, the lexical space in JSON is true TRUE and false FALSE. And that's it. And the value space is, you know, Boolean true and Boolean false. In XSD schema, the lexical space is true TRUE, false FALSE, 0 and 1, but the value space is still, you know, Boolean. So it's, you know, we're being very, very pedantic in this section. And to say that there's full alignment is not true. There's partial alignment. So what do you, you know,
I
what do you want to do
entirely
in that
here?
Say again?
Well, we can still say that the true and false map to XSD Boolean, to the XSD Boolean data
Boolean's
type,
values.
Which is true and false, yeah.
To its value space. We could say that. Would that work for you, Peter?
I would even say, surprisingly enough, that that's a bit too pedantic, and that you do not have to be quite so pedantic. But if you want it there, I'm perfectly happy. Right.
Okay,
and then you can
do
the same thing. But then you could do the same for the other one. So we have strings and whatevers, right? And then I would be happy. I mean, because then essentially we're saying how to view these JSON-like things as RDF-like things.
And one more time, because I think I didn't understand if it was acceptable for you. Would it be okay if we describe that in detail in Appendix C and link to that from Appendix A, or should it really be part of Appendix A? Because we described the relationship in detail in Appendix C, so
yeah.
I think that's the place where it
so
belongs most naturally
appendix,
to jump directly.
Appendix A says data model, right?
Right.
If you say that the data model for JSON LD has as values 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things, well, really 5, then you're saying that there's 5 separate things. You need to at least have something to point to the fact, something to speak to the fact that there are really only 2 kinds of things in the value space.
So you mean like numbers true and false and all that maps to literals, basically?
Yeah, they're typed strings, numbers, true and false are typed values, right?
Yeah.
Or shorthand for, or something like that. You can have a few weasel words in there, fine. I mean, but just because right now reading it, it looks like there are 6 disjoint things in the JSON LD value space.
In the JSON LD value space, they are disjoint. They are disjoint. They're not the same. But mapping them to RDF, then they become the same.
Now I'm confused again.
Well, a string,
here's the issue,
a number,
if
is not
the sentence,
same as a typed value.
That's fine, Marcus, but
it's not.
In Appendix A now, we have to keep in mind we're describing the RDF model now and not the JSON-LD model. We changed this text, so that's one of the reasons that this confusion is happening. This says, to ease the understanding of developers unfamiliar with the RDF model, the following summary is provided. And so we're not linking the JSON-LD values to the RDF model in this sentence. We're just talking about the JSON model. And so Peter's point is apt. It makes sense. We need to, in that sentence, somehow describe the RDF model and say where these things from JSON map.
Right. So we say, for example, a JSON LD value is a string, a number, true, false, or a type value, or a language text string. And we could say that, like, except language text strings, everything maps to a literal in RDF, and language text strings are language text strings. Unfortunately, there is no thing for a non-language text literal in RDF.
I suppose that's okay, but I'm getting a bad feeling again now. Last time I was in one of these calls, we had a discussion over what the relationship between JSON LD and RDF was.
Right.
And I'm now, I thought that we were aligning things, and now we're not?
No, we still are, but this section, the data model section, has turned into this incredibly pedantic section where we try to be as correct as we possibly can. And there are places where different people are concerned about fudging different definitions, right? So we're all trying to align to the RDF data model, but there are certain places where we don't think we can do that because the data models don't quite align. They're not quite in line, and part of that issue is that JSON itself, the RFC that we point to, doesn't have a data model, so we have to interpret it in a certain way, and so we have to get consensus on that interpretation and then see if that interpretation maps to RDF, and in some cases it doesn't, and in some cases there's disagreement on whether it does or not. right? So I think that's the conversation we're having. I think we all still want it to map to RDF. It's just whether or not we believe that it's true. We can do a one-to-one mapping to RDF. And I think the parts that are different right now are the places where some of the people in the group disagree that there is a one-to-one mapping to RDF. Does that help explain what we're attempting to do a bit better?
Not really.
Perhaps we need to go through them, because my interpretation is that where possible, we do map things directly to RDF. Lists are an example of that. For instance, is list part of a data model, or is list basically an interpretation of the linked list mechanism described in RDF schema? My interpretation has always been that it's been a syntactic representation of the RDF version of lists.
Right.
Yeah,
and that's
what I was hoping.
But there's disagreement, so I think Marcus and I disagree that that should be the interpretation of it, because there's no such concept of the linked list in JSON. It's never been discussed. So that's not to say that, you know, either interpretation is wrong. It's just we need to get consensus over what this group is going to interpret it as and put it in the spec, since there is no spec text that we can point to external to these groups. So that's what we need, is we just need consensus. If we have consensus that there's alignment with the RDF data model, then boom, there's alignment, there's no problem. But if there's disagreement, we have to discuss it and come to a consensus on what we're doing in the spec.
Yeah, okay. Right. So anyway, I propose certain spec text, which some of the technical details were incorrect, apparently. But the general, my view, I mean, I proposed a sort of general phraseology for this, which is shorthand for whatever, right? I agree with anything that looks similar to that. And
okay. Well, we agree with that, but we can't do whatever and similar and look something like at this point. We need specific spec text, and we're just going to have to iterate on that, because, you know, we can't be loose about this anymore. We need to figure out exactly what we're doing the proposal on, come to consensus on it, and then move on. So there's
my
agreement
point
with
is
what
that,
you want to do. We just need specific spec text.
Yeah. Right, but
that's
you can't.
Correct.
But now you can't ask me to produce that, because apparently I lack the 10 years of experience to know what's going on.
Okay, so
and it's
what
impossible.
I've done to the spec
and moreover,
at this point is what I think is the correct thing so far. So if there are other people in the group that feel that it needs to change to align with what you said or with the discussions we've had, someone needs to step forward and propose some spec text, because I feel that we've done as much as we can in modulo some editorial changes that you've put in during the past week. I think technically we've done as much as we can do as far as alignment's concerned. So if you think that there isn't alignment and we come back with, well, we thought that there was, then we can work on that spec text. But if you say, Peter, there isn't alignment, and we say, yes, that's true, and there's no way we can get technical alignment, then that's the way things are probably going to stay. So perhaps instead
okay,
of asking you
so,
to write spec text, Peter, we can ask other people in the group, what more alignment can we do? Maybe Peter,
well,
you can point
I,
out
I,
places
I,
where you don't. Go ahead.
I have pointed out, I think I have precisely pointed out the places where I think changes need to be made, and I suggested spec text for those changes. And certainly the numbers, the one for numbers, needs to be modified, apparently.
We'll do that, yes.
So
one thing that came out of this discussion is we'll do the modification for numbers. What I can do is go and look at your other proposals and respond exactly why I think technically we can't make the change, and then whittle away at that, and hopefully someone else in the JSON-LD group will be able to chime in with some other proposed spec text.
So why don't you try for true and false first, because that seems to be the simplest one.
Okay. Marcus, you were going to say something?
Yeah, maybe you haven't read Peter's most recent emails. Maybe you're talking about different things, because I think Peter and I are very close to consensus, and he proposed something like, for example, he said in the sentence which says a JSON-LD value is a string, a number, true or false. So, for example, he proposed to say true or false and put somewhere in parentheses or something, which is a shorthand for a type value with type XSD Boolean or something like that.
Right. Yep. Yeah, and that would be fine. I just want to make sure that that's actually the spec text that would be that everyone agrees to that we should put in the spec.
Well, I think it might be useful if we just put proposals out for the individual spec text pieces so we can make progress where we're able to do so.
Sure. Okay. Marcus, do you have that specific email in front of you?
I have it. I'm just looking for the link. Here it is. Okay, so the parts where there are changes are marked with asterisks.
Right, yeah.
Start down at a JSON-LD value, basically.
Yeah, so the first change, the precise details of how JSON-LD documents represent the Doherty of data model are given in Appendix C. I think that's editorial. No one would disagree with that. The informative summary bit was a bit problematic because the whole section's normative, and I know that there was some back and forth on whether or not the section's normative or informative. But I think we need to discuss that. I don't think the summary is really, it's not informative because we use RFC keywords all over the place. So I think that would be confusing if we said informative. Any other thoughts on that?
I agree. But I commend it the same way.
Yeah. And the whole shorthand stuff, I feel it's a little hand wavy, but I'm fine with it. I don't think that many people are going to really understand what we're getting at there. But I don't have a better proposal of what it should be at this point. Marcus, do you have any particular read on that? I thought XSD integer.
My proposal would be to clarify that in Appendix C, so to say that the string is serialized or is mapped to a RDF literal with a type of XSD string, etc.
Yeah.
It doesn't really
do have an issue?
Matter within JSON-LD.
Peter, would you have an issue with that, or was that...
I don't have an issue with clarifying in the Appendix C, but the point I'm trying to make here is that somewhere in that point for JSON-LD values, there needs to be at least something that you can point. There has to be something there that says that there's not six disjoint different kinds of things.
So what if we say a JSON-LD value is a string, etc., and then add the sentence, JSON-LD values map to RDF literals, details can be found in Appendix C.
Right.
I don't think that's correct.
Why not?
You could say the JSON value map, but the whole point of this thing, I mean, so here we are, we look at the beginning of this, and I'm looking at my changes, so I don't know whether they're quite up to date. It says a JSON-LD document serializes a generalized RDF data set.
Right.
So somewhere here, there has to be some notion that the JSON-LD things fit within the RDF model. Because if they don't, don't somehow fit within the RDF model, then the first sentence is wrong.
Isn't that what I just said, that the JSON-LD value maps corresponds whatever to an RDF literal, and the mapping is described in detail in Appendix C?
Mapping indicates you're mapping between two different things.
What word would you prefer?
You could say is.
Oh, substitute a different word?
What
shorthand for?
That's fine. If shorthand works for you, we can put that in. I don't know if that... unless there's another word that you'd be happy with, Peter, I don't think shorthand does that much damage in there. So if that makes Peter happy, I say we just put it in the spec and be done with it.
I'd be happier with is, but shorthand... I mean, I was trying to use shorthand as something that was vague enough that... essentially corresponds to what reality will be, and that in many cases this JSON values will be used, right? And I didn't want to say is, because then people might get their dander up and say, oh, that means we can't use JSON values anywhere in a JSON LD process, right?
Can we say is interpreted?
And I thought that...
we use that language.
That might also work.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's go with that. We use that language elsewhere, and people have been happy with it. So let's go with that language.
I missed the language.
It's interpreted as.
Okay.
We can say it's interpreted as. Yeah.
Okay, interpreted as. That's good. Okay, so we'll do
that.
That
would work
and
for
then,
me.
Okay, fantastic. Yay, progress. And then the last bit was most types and type values are XML schema data types, pointer to the document.
I'm not too happy about that, as I already said in the mailing list, because I think it confuses people more than it helps, especially in the JSON specification.
Yeah, I'm not wed to that one either. I like it, but I could live without it.
Okay, yeah, that makes me feel a bit uncomfortable as well, just because it's not true that most types... I don't know if we can make a statement like that, most types.
I think I agree with you that most types is wrong. It's the wrong thing to put in a spec, although it's true in practice.
Right.
Right.
Okay, would you be okay if we just left that out? Or we say often types in type values are XML schema.
I would prefer to just leave it out if that's fine for Peter.
I think we can leave it out here. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we'll leave that out. And then the last one is list as a sequence, blah, blah, blah. JSON-LD lists are shorthands for RDF list structures. And I think this is that interpreted as, yeah. I'd be fine with the interpreted as.
Yep. And then I think I think you can use an informative pointer into semantics. That's because it talks about them at the end, and then you don't have to worry about anything with having the fact that RDF schema may lag or anything like that. RDF semantics is going into last call. I thought it was going into last call tomorrow, but hopefully, imminently.
Right. Okay.
Should we say here JSON-LD lists map to RDF lists? Because I mean they are not really interfaced.
We don't
want to
say map.
RDF list, right? No.
Yeah.
Let's just say interpreted as.
Yeah. I think interpreted is the right language. I think that works for everybody. Okay. So those are all the changes in that email, Peter. Are there any other changes that you had that are fairly major?
No, I think that's it. I haven't carefully reread the introductory parts, but I don't see any showstoppers there. I mean, sorry, okay. Let me rephrase that. I don't see any showstoppers there for this stage of I don't see any showstoppers there for this late in the process.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. And we are going to try and clean up some editorial stuff in the introduction. So if you're going to reread it, wait until we're in candidate rec to do that, or just before candidate rec. Okay. So I'm going to take what we just discussed, Peter, and I'm going to apply it to the spec, and then we'll just do another rev and see if you're happy with these changes. And if so, then we can cheer and move forward. Okay. Anything else on this, Peter?
No.
All right. Okay. So we're at the end of the 90-minute call. Anything else that we should discuss before next week? Anything we should, I guess, be aware of before next week?
No, I just would like people to go vote on this so we can get this out of the way. I put a link in here.
Okay.
For the the remote document changes.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks, everyone, for the call. I know it's difficult to get this last bit of consensus done, but it's good. I think we finally came to something we could all agree to. And thank you, Peter, for taking the time, and David, and the rest of the folks that don't necessarily join us on every call. Okay. Thanks, all. We'll chat again next Tuesday.
Great. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye.